We are back, Burko and Brentley with you, College Golf Talk, doing this late morning Friday. We'll call it high noon East Coast. We're going to wrap up an amazing week for the women. We're going to preview the men that are a couple hours into the opening round. I made the coast-to-coast red-eye flight for fifth grade, grade school graduation for our oldest that we just finished a short time ago, a little walkout at school. The things
what?
We do, and
they do that for fifth grade now?
Well, because this fifth grade will now go to the new high school campus. 6 through 12 is on a new campus. Yeah, I'm not a big believer of let's celebrate every grade, but they're done. They're done at that school, and especially since we will have a new school in a new place with a new move, I didn't want to cheat him on a last chance to see people for what he probably doesn't realize for the very last time, but I'll let him believe that he'll be friends with all these kids for the rest of his life.
Hey, he might. And you went to Disney World too. You're squeezing
we went to Magic
the,
Kingdom
final drops.
At Magic Kingdom until 10 last night. Half day of school, it's over. I get a year wiser tomorrow, supposedly. So it's a 48-hour free-for-all of school, birthday celebrations, a little college golf talk, and then right back to La Casa. We'll get up and running on Monday with the individual champion crown and the race for eight. And we'll go right there with the women. Let's start that individual showdown, if you will, because that first page of the leaderboard was really, really good. Ultimately, Maria Jose Marin, the sophomore from Arkansas, prevails. Third Razorback to ever win an individual championship for the women, joining Stacey Lewis and Maria Fossey. Kind of ironic, both those players, also the only Arkansas SEC Player of the Year award winners, just like Maria. And she was solid, as we know she is. Every bit is good. I think you touched on it. Maybe doesn't get weaved in the conversation of Mirabel Ting, who won the Annika Award presented by Stiefel, who made a run on that back nine, five birdies on that inward half. Lottie Woad got off to a good start, sort of dropped back, but it's kind of what you would have hoped for in terms of a good bulk of the great players were right there. And if I'm not mistaken, what I read, and I believe it's true, didn't get in the archives, Stanford, the first women's team at the championship since 82 to have four players inside the top 10.
Yeah. I mean, it's no surprise that they shot, 27 under, which absolutely demolished USC's 19 under from 2013. I mean, it's one of those things. I know this has become kind of the popular talk of conversation too. And should it be match play? Should it be stroke play? You had Ann Walker 2 days ago, and I thought it was a really eloquent quote, you know, talking about how, yeah, we might have five straight national titles if this was 72 holes of stroke play. But she said for little girls to be at home, sitting on their couch and watching, you know, the matches and watching someone like Maria win an individual title, like the way that the format is set up now, I think is the most compelling. And I think it's the best to move the sport forward. So it might not always crown the best champion, but we don't see that in other sports. We don't see that in basketball all the time. What was the great Kentucky team with Carl Towns and Devin Booker? They went undefeated and then they lose to Wisconsin in the Final Four and Duke ends up winning that year. I mean, it just, that stuff kind of happened. So probably the best team of all time. Would you agree with that? I mean, them and Arizona State, maybe a 1A.
Yeah, they're one of the best. If they would have won the national championship, they're one of those two or three greatest of all time. They're certainly one of the best, probably the best we've seen in the last 20 years, even though they didn't win it. A number I came across and threw out on the broadcast in Golf Central, Kelly Sue had a scoring average of 71.46. That was I hesitate to say the worst, but the highest scoring average of the five players from Stanford that were at La Costa last week. That 71.46 is the 12th best in the history of Stanford women's golf. So that means 5 of the 12 best single seasons ever for the Cardinal, all 5 just played in California. Nearly half of them.
Was that post regionals or post stroke point?
I glanced. It was off the Stanford stats. I'm going to say it was probably through regionals.
Which is probably an even crazier stat now because she was solo third.
Yeah, it's staggering because you got to think Rose accounted for 2 of them. Rachel Heck, probably 1 or 2.
At least one, yeah.
So
Albin,
it's,
Andrea.
You know, yeah, it's amazing talent. They all won individually except Kelly, who had a chance until that tee shot at 16. Final day of stroke play. Everyone is entitled to the yearly rant and rave. Why are we doing this? You and I had breakfast with Berko and unsolicitedly said, this is what it's about. This is about growing the swing. She could easily be the first one in line raising her hand saying, this is awful. It's cost me 5 national championships.
Yep.
And she does it. We do it because we love it. Others can think differently. Would we have ever gotten down this road 11 years ago with the men if it wasn't switched to match play? And I say that from a television standpoint. Joe fan at home can understand that A plays B and A won the hole. I think one of the more challenging things that I enjoy, and we all do part of the broadcast, so-and-so is accounting score for now.
For now,
I've
yeah.
I've always said it, and let's quickly, I'm going on a sidebar. That 2013, I was standing behind the 18th green in Athens. Andrea Gaston, the longtime head coach at USC, was about to win her 3rd national championship. And she had caught rumblings. Things were going to change and hopefully TV would be involved. And she said, is this true? And I said, I think there are discussions. She's like, but this is amazing. Look what we're doing. And I said, 100%. But anyone at home is going to turn it on and click it off. Oh, USC's up by 25. It's over. Why am I watching? And she sort of was like, I get it. I want to enjoy this moment, but you can't sell the story. Don't go anywhere because Stanford could give back 20 shots in the back 9. It's not going to happen. But we can sell the narrative that, whew, extra holes upcoming, 2-2, Revuelta and Lee playing 8. Like, that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, I mean, this is a golf course, too, that I think is so spectacularly designed or redesigned in that it's not like Northwestern came out of nowhere. They weren't Oregon men in 2016. Like, they finished 3rd in stroke play. They were number 10 in the country. This is a golf course that will do its job for the most part in identifying and rewarding the best teams. And Stanford still got to the final. They were, I mean, for a minute there, I thought they were going to rally. And then you have the 3-putt by Andrea Revuelta on 16. And I think individually too, I mean, we don't get that leaderboard on a lot of other golf courses. I mean, this is a golf course that rewards the precision, also a little bit of the power. You gotta take advantage of your opportunities when you get them. And someone like Maria, just probably one of the more precise players in college golf. You look at the wear patterns on her irons. She only made 1 bogey the last 36 holes. So I feel like individually this golf course identified the best champion. And I feel like as a team, yeah, it didn't do that. But Northwestern was, I mean, they were the 3rd best team this week after 72 holes. So it's not like this needs to be totally blown up and redone. I mean, I don't think that should happen.
And they played at the Norman Regional with Stanford.
It's like 9 shots, right?
Yeah, memory serves, came in 2nd, and Emily Fletcher sharing with us of it was great for them to kind of walk side by side and say, yes, they're good, but we're not that far behind. And I laughed with Emily at some point during the week, and it wasn't even before the finals of, and you know me, we've done this long enough. Every 2 or 3 years, they're my under-the-radar team. I'm always bullish. And you look at it, and they're young. Other than Lauren Wynn, they're fresh faces, freshmen and sophomores. So I said, you killed me. The one year I didn't say keep an eye on Northwestern, they get the job done. it was amazing. And somebody told me, obviously in the mix of calling that winning putt and then saying nothing, when it was done, Ann Walker goes over, congratulates, hugs Emily Fletcher. And I hadn't seen it, but multiple people said it happened. She went, grabbed Deanna Lee's putter, her head cover, the golf ball out of the hole, and made sure it was right by Deanna Lee's bag. That's all you need to know about Ann Walker.
Yeah, I actually got a text. Let me look for it real quick. It was from someone who's been around a long, long, long time. And all right, I'll read it. I was very, very impressed with the sportsmanship and sincerity that Stanford women showed yesterday congratulating Northwestern players. There must be one great culture within that program. They do it right. So, I mean, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, it's great. They're great. They had an amazing season. But when you look at Northwestern, when we had breakfast with Burko and we spent time with Emily Fletcher, she was adamant to make sure that Beth Miller, their assistant, who's been there every step of the way for 17 years, got her due praise. I said it on the air. We'll say it here. This isn't by chance, and I think you followed it up with, usually the assistant coaching door is a revolving one, mm-hmm. and it goes quickly. We also would be remiss not to mention Pat Goss, the former men's golf coach at Northwestern, now the director of golf for both programs. Emily telling us this doesn't happen without Pat. He said we are 100% equals in terms of opportunity. Yeah. And you think about that. Stanford's the same way. Florida State's the same way. They made it to the semis. It is kind of refreshing in this day and age where so many people, oh, the men get this, but the women get that. You're looking at three programs right there in Oregon. You can throw in that mix. There's an understanding by the powers to be that inclusivity on this front. I don't want to say every single thing, but
yeah,
they're treated as one, and that's great. We've covered this long enough. I've done it a whole lot longer only because I'm older. I probably never would have thought a team from quote unquote the Midwest would have won. Purdue did it about 15 years ago with Devin Brouse then leading the way, Maria Hernandez on that team. You could throw Washington into the mix, even though it's the Pacific Northwest, their weather far from ideal. But in this day and age of facilities, weather, everything that goes with it, I have this immense feeling of pride that covering the game and simply cut off there, that it can be done anywhere. It's really great to see.
Yeah, I've always been, I know you've been on the Northwestern bandwagon a lot more than I have. And so I've always kind of observed from a little bit of a distance, but spending more time around them, you know, spending that hour with Emily on Wednesday morning with you, I've come away. I mean, we talk about the respect that we have for Ann and Stanford. I've come away equally impressed with the job that Emily has done at Northwestern. I mean, and you mentioned that synergy between the two programs. She's sitting there, you know, a couple minutes before pairings for the final, and Pat Goss slides his phone over, and it's a text message from Luke Donald, you know, the European Ryder Cup captain, Northwestern alum. That doesn't always happen with other programs. And that quote at the end of the message that, you know, we shared on the broadcast, I shared in the post game and asked her about it, and she had such a great response to that. But the quote was, "The greatest pleasure in life is doing something that others think cannot be done or you could not do." And she kind of spun it around after they had won and said it was more about doing something that we believed we could do. And it's just little things like that, and shows that she's wired a little bit differently than others. And I came away, and, you know, I thought, you know, as a motivator, as a coach, I think, you know, infinitely more now, you know, at having spent time around Emily and her players too. I mean, I wanted to share this story because I ended up leading with it in my gamer yesterday, but Lauren Nguyen, I mean, all of these players really impressed me in front of the microphone. Deanna Lee, her emotion, like the raw emotion, you know, for the Tuesday and Wednesday night on the broadcast with the tears and stuff. I was super impressed by them. But Lauren Nguyen, their lone senior, she's from Seattle. She has an incredible story. I mean, her parents, there's a photo of her mom and her grandmother on essentially what's a raft with like two dozen other people. There's a grainy photo that a Coast Guard snapped. And basically in 1980, they immigrated from Vietnam to the U.S., didn't have any money, settled in Seattle. Her father did the same thing, same year. They meet, you know, there's a little bit more to the story too, in terms of Lauren's grandfather was involved in an accident and Lauren's mother had to basically take care of her siblings while her mother took care of her dad. And, you know, they grew up, both Lauren's parents ended up being engineers for Boeing. But you know, that's a lot of hours. And so, Lauren's mother talked with me about how she stepped down from that to try to spend more time with Lauren and her brother. Didn't, you know, still very much hardworking, blue collar, did everything they could to make sure that Lauren's junior golf career put her in a position where she could be the player that she is today. And so when I asked Lauren on Wednesday night afterwards, how much of this is because of your parents' sacrifice? And I mean, she couldn't say enough about it. I mean, she knows where she came from. And it's just one of those things, like, I think some of us take for granted, like our lineage, because it's been a lot easier. But that was, you know, for her parents to basically, the fearlessness that they showed and her grandparents showed to come over here and start a better life. I thought the fact that Lauren Nguyen is now a national champion, you know, made a winning putt to win her match in the final. Yeah, it doesn't get better than that.
Yeah, the last name says it all, Win. And that's what she's done for her time at Northwestern. As we wrap it up, the message all week long from Northwestern was they have an immense belief in one another. We're trying to get them to have that same belief in themselves. It certainly showed. You mentioned Luke Donald. I was text messaging with him on that Wednesday saying he loves the facts that they're underdogs. That can be quite freeing in a way to have a chance to win their first national title. Amazing to build a legacy, a recruiting opportunity for the future. The girls work so hard. Emily and Beth, an amazing inspiration. He hopes they do it. They did. It was another great one. I think I said it coming down the stretch on the broadcast. The women have provided, more often than not, the better drama than the men.
Yeah.
If you look at the last 10 years since the switch to match play for the women. So
has it gotten better than 2015? I think we got off to such a remarkable start with match play and women's golf.
Well, that was, again, Haley Davis still hit one of the three or four best golf shots I've ever seen in my life, yeah, considering ever. The situation. But then the following year, Washington, rabbits coming from everywhere out of hats to win. Yep. We've been fortunate, and we hope we'll get the same for the men as we pivot there. Again, we're Friday lunchtime on the East Coast. So, you know, a few hours in, so the scores don't matter because whoever's leading now isn't going to be leading most likely.
Yeah, we'll get this Monday up before the top-ranked teams go off this afternoon around 4 Eastern, around 3 Eastern.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many thoughts of teams to keep an eye on. You know, we start right at the top with Auburn. They certainly aren't going to win 10 times like they did a season ago. I get the sense they're every bit as good, you know, maybe in a different way, if you will. Jackson Koivin winning SECs, winning regionals, he's peaking. Just perusing the rankings, Oklahoma State at number 2. They're back. You know, how far back we'll see, but they're certainly a contender. I'm just glancing. I'm not going to go through every one. Arizona State at 5 is intriguing. You never overlook Oklahoma. In Illinois, they seemingly find a way. Yes, I am a proud Florida Gator, but the fact that they're coming in off SEC championship, off a regional title, it's a small sample, but the last two teams to win the SECs won the national title, Florida in 23, Auburn in 24. Those are 4, 5, 6 teams that I would not be shocked that two or three of them are in the semifinals come Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, and I think a big reason for, you know, that history between the SEC and the national championship is because the SEC championship is essentially this tournament on hyperdrive. I mean, it's a deeper field, and it is, you know, because of that, it is a deeper match play pool. So to win an SEC championship, I believe is tougher than winning this national championship. My only concern with Florida is that Ian Gilligan has, you know, he's had such a great year. He shot a big number at U.S. Open locals. He's got off to a poor start at regionals, did put together a solid final round. He's been over in California working with his swing coach, George Gankus. So I think their success and how far they go will hinge on what Ian Gilligan does. You mentioned Auburn also. They haven't won as prolifically as they did a year ago, but I think the adversity that they've dealt with throughout the year has made them stronger, whether it would be Brendan Valdez having surgery on his hand and coming back and not really missing a beat, or Josiah Gilbert not qualifying for the first event of the spring after a great fall. Carson Baca has really come into his own. He's, last summer made a bunch of wholesale changes to his swing with his coach, Mark Blackburn. And they're finally starting to take hold. And I think he's now enjoying a run of a few months where he's really confident with his game. I think out of all the teams in the top 10, and you know, you might agree with me here, the biggest question mark remains Ole Miss. They've only been in this situation now for the third time under head coach Chris Boy. They've had a lot of, I would say, when we talk about adversity, they've had a lot of crazy adversity this year, whether it's their assistant coach getting drilled with a golf ball in Puerto Rico and ending up in the emergency room. All five players had the flu. You think about what happened last year where they all had the stomach virus right around conference championship time, didn't get through. And then the craziest story of all, and I ran into him a couple days ago getting coffee, but Michael Lasasso, their best player, they were in Cabo. They're enjoying some time. I think it was before the tournament started on the beach. His teammates were in the water. He was walking toward the water and he stepped on what felt like a seashell. He kept walking. He's like, gosh, this is kind of painful. Well, lo and behold, he stepped on a sea urchin and he spent the next 2 hours with a doctor with a scalpel and a needle. And those sea urchin barbs, they don't come out easily. It's like dozens of tiny fish hooks that you have to surgically remove from your foot. And he ended up playing that week. But I think as long as Ole Miss, as long as that craziness and that bad luck is behind them, they could have a good week. But I feel like they have the biggest question mark amongst the, I guess you would say, quote unquote, favorites this week.
Individually, big names we'll keep an eye on. Luke Clanton, who won the Hogan Award, Jackson Coyvin from Auburn. David Ford, not there. He's playing at Colonial. He's a professional. North Carolina didn't get through. I'll be curious because he's got the number one spot in PGA Tour U, and we haven't ripped apart the numbers. But I think it's clinched. It's done.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I forget who did. I believe it was either Jim Colton or Ryan Fraser did the computations on it, and it's so close, but it is officially over. But the Haskins Award, that's the one. I've heard it's very close. Well, I'll just say that.
Fair enough.
So make sure you get your vote in, Burko.
Well, I have to wait because we're not.
Me too.
To me, we're not there yet. We've been talking a lot about Vanderbilt, Gordon Sargent. I picked up the phone, had a really good talk with Scott Limbaugh. Gordon's not there. That was a nice sit down, a good meeting. Let's just leave it at that. But we wondered what role he might play. And it will be one as a fan cheering on his team.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate. And, you know, you go back over the years and, you know, you mentioned Ryan Hibble, kind of a similar situation at Georgia, such a great player, lost his game. I think about Brad Dahlke at Oklahoma after winning a national championship as a sophomore or junior. And as a sophomore in his junior year, just didn't have it. Senior year ended up finally getting that game back. But, you know, these kind of things happen. This sport is fickle. And, I think we've said it all along. I mean, Gordon Sargent will get it back eventually. It's just it wasn't on the timeline that I think he thought. And you know, you mentioned David Ford not being here as well. I saw an interview with Dan Rappaport was talking with Chris Hack yesterday, and there was a video that was posted online, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, but Hack was saying that he thinks that the individual national championship and the team national championship should be separate. There should be an individual so that David Ford is not reliant on his team indoor, you know, being that lone advancing individual, not on an advancing team. And then you have the team championship. I don't know, would those be played back to back in the spring? Would the individual be at the end of the fall? I haven't really thought much about it, but I guess on the surface, it kind of makes a little bit of sense.
I believe, and I'm wrong more often than not, that's what they do in tennis. Mm-hmm. I believe is a separation in college tennis. This particular week is for the best singles and doubles, and this particular time frame is for a team championship. I've heard that rumbled through the years. You know, you'll get some of the naysayers saying it should be 54 holes and match play should be one match each day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And then the old guard that I lean into, a proper championship is a 72-hole affair. And that's what it is. You know what? I don't know if it would ever be in our lifetime, or at least coverage time, that you'll ever see those separated. Would be my initial reaction.
I'd like to see some sort of all-star event, like individual all-star game, if you will, at the end of the fall, like kind of how we used to have the Western Refining, the Sun Bowl.
You read my mind because those guys have been so good to me. I was fortunate to be part of that All-American event for so many years. And you look at past champs, Mickelson, Duvall, I believe Tiger was there 1 year, if memory serves.
Didn't win, but I think he did go 1 year.
Yeah, and then the pandemic sort of slowed it down. The problem there, they were having a challenging time getting the best. Oh, well, it's going to affect my world amateur golf ranking. It used to just be, here are 20 or 30 of the best. Let's put on a show. To, oh, my divisor this, my number's here, we have to get a release. And you know where I stand on all that.
Do you have a sleeper this week?
Do I have a sleeper this week? Let me at least, again, peruse the boards. You know,
I'll go first. Again,
yeah, give me a sleeper. I'm gonna scroll teams without looking at names to say, you know what, I've been thinking about that.
Well, I'm gonna go BYU while you decide on your sleeper. And you know, this is I consider a sleeper different than a Cinderella. You know, your Troys and your Augustas are Cinderellas. They're teams that are, I guess, quote unquote, just happy to be here. You know, that's no disrespect to them. It's just, statistically, it would be a really long climb for them to get in. But BYU is a team that I absolutely believe could get into match play. And they have already played their third round because of religious reasons. They don't compete on Sunday. So they played their first round. I actually went out and watched a little bit of that yesterday on Thursday afternoon. And they shot one over, which it's so hard to kind of gauge where that would stack up. The course is a little bit softer, but considering that just one team after 72 holes was under par a year ago, and that was Illinois, I have to believe that one over is going to play. So they just have to – I think this is a team that might not have – and I was talking to some of the parents too yesterday. They might not have your Jackson Koivin, Luke Clanton type number one guy. But Cole Ponich was a former AJGA All-American with guys like John Pock, who's leading at Colonial right now, went through some back issues. He's in his sixth year. He's the unquestioned leader of this team. But you add guys like Peter Kim, and you add Johnny Miller's grandson, Simon Kwan, and it's a team that I think has some depth, and they're going to be really good next year. You add guys like Jackson Moss, and I believe Cooper Jones is coming back from his mission. I don't know if they have anyone graduating other than Cole, but this is a team that they won regionals. I realized it was in the snow in Reno, so it was right up their alley. But this is a team that I could see get off to a good start. They're going to be playing this morning. So they'll have two rounds under their belt. They'll get a rest day on Sunday, assuming that they qualify for that final round on Monday. And I think that might be imperative because this is a long week. It's not as much of an endurance test as we saw for the 3 years when it was at Greyhawk. But I would not be surprised to see BYU make match play. I'll just leave it at that.
All right. So I misunderstood you. I was looking for an individual sleeper. And I'm going to go to Caden Fioroni from UNLV, a California kid. Kind
They're
of
leading
that
right
next,
now. It's early.
Why they dropped back. They dropped back. He's won over. But I'm still going there from a team standpoint. I'll give you one because it's been a while. They're trending. UCLA. The job Armin Kirikosian has done, Omar Moreno, Pablo Areno, a nice 1-2 punch, playing close to home, if you will. Maybe the Bruins sneak into the mix, cause a little chaos on that Monday in the race for eight.
Yeah, it's been a long time since they've been at this championship, and I actually saw them yesterday. They were also out watching the women's finals. So, you know, these teams have been here for quite some time. I started seeing some of these men's players trickle in on Monday of the women, Monday or Tuesday. So they've been here a long time. You wonder if, you know, the longer you're here, that anticipation builds up. You know, they're Big Ten champions. I like that pick. I think that they have a huge shot. And, you know, speaking of UCLA, we didn't touch on this, but shout out to the job that Alicia Holmes did on that women's team. You lose Zoe Campos, you lose Caroline Canales, and the way that you did with her playing one event in the spring and then saying, oh, you know, by the way, I changed my mind. For her to get that team into that final day and for a moment there have a chance to make the top eight, it's hard-pressed to go against Emily Fletcher now or an Ann Walker for a coach of the year, but absolutely Alicia should be amongst that top three. So kudos to her. And there was one more thing, too, I wanted to discuss. I know we're getting a little bit heavy here, but
And before you do, let me quickly jump in off the coaching standpoint, because I know where you're going. Less than 48 hours after the final day of Monday of stroke play, Oklahoma State, the women, Greg Robertson, a great head coach with a really good resume, a young team, was told he's not coming back, that he had done nothing wrong. But the contract was up. They weren't going to renew. We've both been in touch with Greg. There are always two sides to every story. But a quick thought, there are maybe 5 to 7 coaches that have done more in the last 5 or 6 years than he has in Stillwater. So to say you've done nothing wrong, we want to go in a different direction. Things are different at Oklahoma State. There is a standard, especially for the men. As nicely as I can say, good luck finding somebody better than Greg Robertson. Good guys, good coach. And I'm not sure what you're looking for if you're telling him to hit the road. Again, two sides to every story. Maybe there are things we don't know. But at face value, with what's been shared to us, and other people in the media, makes zero sense to me.
Well, especially considering that program, you know, had been playing, you know, last week, played their 5th straight national championship. There's only been Correct. 5 or 6 other teams that can boast that. So, again, I know the standards are high there. I would question that they might be too high. And, you know, it's just another – you know, kind of thing we could say that kind of disappoints us about the sport sometimes. And, you know, I think about, you know, certainly the coaching changes, but also the changes on these rosters that it's tough to be a coach. I mean, there were so many stories I heard last week of players who had gone in the portal. We touched on Georgia Southern. I don't even think we've touched on Georgia Southern since their last two players got in the portal. So every player on that roster jumped in the portal before they arrived at La Costa. There were tears on the putting green. It was a very awkward few days for that program amongst, you know, coming from people who witnessed, you know, and were around them last week. You think about players who are about to jump in the portal, and not to name any names, but there may be a player, you know, amongst the teams who played on Wednesday, who is planning on entering the portal. And I think it's just one of those where it's almost like no one's ever satisfied these days. And I realize that players should have, you know, the power and the agency to be able to improve their situation for sure. But it puts the coaches in a very difficult spot. And, you know, I think some of it's unfair because you can't properly coach a young player without hurting their feelings sometimes. And, you know, I believe that's how you grow, you know, tough love. And, you know, I think if someone treats you with kid gloves and tries to just say yes to everything, you're not advancing as a player, you're not advancing as a person. And so I feel for these coaches because you hold someone out of the lineup or you tell them the wrong thing, trying, you know, coming out of the goodness of your heart to try to make them better, and you hurt their feelings, they want to go someplace else. And you have coaches that are telling their players to contact other players at other schools and tell them, hey, we have 20K, 30K, 40K for you if you come. There's a lot of tampering going on, and it's kind of disgusting, to be honest. So I could get riled up on this, but it's just not a good look, and something's got to happen.
Completely there with you. You know where I stand. I can tell you with certainty, one of the very best in college golf gets a whopping $100,000 a year.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not. That's money. That's meaningful dollars. That person is one of the standards. No disrespect to anyone at Georgia Southern. Good women, I'm sure. Good players. They'll be lucky to get 20. So you're going to – you said it all. I'll go down a road I regret. And I say to all the coaches, you don't get paid enough. Yes, it's the new wave. It's college golf. I love what we do. College golf doesn't make money for any school. College golf as an expenditure that I think, as I saw one of our colleagues in the media say, Stephen F. Austin's gotten rid of their golf teams. They're gone. And it's going to happen more once things get settled, payments are made. People are going to say, why are we committing 800 grand or 1.7 million to golf? It's a losing proposition. I hope I'm long gone covering it by then. Figure out the portal after the season. We saw the same thing with March Madness. People are getting ready for a Sweet 16 and they're, hey, by the way, coach, this is my last game. I'm in the portal. If I'm the Georgia Southern coach, and I know you can't, I turn that plane around from regionals and we're done. That's it. Good luck. Because as you said, you're always going to have that bittersweet, well, look what we did and look what we could keep going if you're leaving, but you're deciding that you want to go to a bigger or better place or that 20 grand is going to change your life. No, it's not. Yep. You might think so at 20 years old. Let's end on a positive note. We've had an amazing week at the
Costa. Yeah. It's been awesome.
Can't wait for another. You're hunkered down there in Carlsbad. I'll hop back on a plane and we'll be rocking and rolling come Monday for the race for eight to make match play and crown an individual national champ.
Yeah, so I have a couple of funny stories, laundry list items before we log off. One, I think someone's messing with me, but this person would have maybe an idea of what room I'm staying in, but I was
let's keep that private here.
What's no, hold on. Yeah, I'm not going to say the room just in case, you know, because I have stalkers and people who are trying to get in my ear. No, I'm just kidding. But I was at the Haskins Honor event on Wednesday night, which is, you know, a great deal. You get all the 10 finalists there. Obviously, David Ford was not there because he's playing at Colonial this week, but nine in the room, Ben Crenshaw. Ben Adelberg does a great job emceeing the night, but it's at the Grand Blanc, which is this just ridiculous house left of the first green. And it's just a night where these players can all be around each other. But as the night was winding down, I'm standing there and, you know, this person was talking and they weren't necessarily talking to me. It was like a little group of people. I believe Crenshaw was there as well. And he said it loud enough for me to hear, but he said, yeah, Arnold Palmer used to always stay in room 911. And then he said, Tiger used to always stay in room. And then he said, my room number. And I'm like, no way, you're messing with me. So I went and verified, and he was indeed messing with me. So I've already been duped this week. And then my second laundry list item is apologies for last week's episode. I thought I had the intro. I thought I cut it right when we started, but apparently we had some nice Sam Bradford US four ball conversation. And so for fans of Sam Bradford in Oklahoma, you're welcome, but it won't happen again. I will make sure that it is tidied up and buttoned up and professional, and we will get an intro out this week. Fingers crossed.
Fair enough. Always a pleasure. Hold the fort until I get back out there. And as always, we appreciate you each and every week for listening to College Golf Talk. National championships starting 6 p.m. Eastern Monday on Golf Channel. We'll see you there.